Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Together is a series of intimate and thoughtful conversations hosted by SFU alums Salome Mengo Morales, Ira Rishi, undergraduate student Kovo, and myself, Paola Quiroz Cruz, one of the educators at the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office. Featuring guests from diverse professional and life experiences, these interviews explore how healing, while deeply personal, is also profoundly communal. Healing thrives when communities come together to create spaces, attitudes, and practices that support it. Join us as we listen, reflect, and reimagine healing as a shared responsibility. This episode is a gentle conversation between host Ira Rishi and Trisha K. Williams, SFU's counselor who has been working with Black students on campus. They reflect on the importance of long-lasting community-based support for survivors. They explore the deep responsibility and privilege of being entrusted with someone's story and what it means to receive that trust with humility. Through their conversation, they invite listeners to chip away from centering themselves and toward becoming attentive patient listeners, steady resource givers, and careful space holders. This episode highlights how humility, presence, and intentionality can profoundly change the way we show up for survivors, and how our attitude, our openness, and our willingness to truly hold space can transform not only the healing journey of survivors, but the culture of care within our communities. This conversation includes reference to sexualized violence. We encourage you to take care for yourself and reach out to support resources if needed.
Well, hello and welcome to Healing Together. I'm Ira. I'm one of your hosts for the series. And just a quick introduction about me. I'm from India and I finished my degree here at Simon Fraser University in December 23, and just given my own cultural background, because I'm also from like a very collectivistic and a very community oriented culture, like I can understand the importance of community in healing, and which is what we'll be exploring in today's episode. And to dive into today's conversation, I'm joined by Trisha K. Williams. Trisha has extensive experience in counseling individuals and families and is skilled in treating trauma, anxiety, transitional and career and relational issues. She's also an active community and social services professional. And I hear you've also worked for some years at the residential as a residential youth worker. Trisha is also an advocate for anti-racism that affects BIPOC individuals and consults with organizations to foster a more anti-racist approach. So I'm really excited to just learn more from you, Trisha, and to just get into the insight and in how we can build communities that truly support healing. So welcome.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here and to talk about this very important topic.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for being here. I guess today our main focus for today's episode is going to be the role of community in healing. And we're really grateful to have you to share your reflections and your wisdom here with us. So just to start us off, Trisha, what drew you to your line of work first? And like, what has your experience been like in just creating those sort of safer spaces and communities for Black students on campus?
And so what drew me to my line of work? I would say that, again, being a Black person, so with lived experience of experiencing marginalization and racism, I would say that, I guess I thought of it as something that is important for me to do in a sense. Where did it start? So I grew up in Jamaica, a really tiny island. And in Jamaica, like skin color isn't necessarily like a huge, thing that people talk about. Like it's somewhat accepted. I think the closest thing to, I guess, to it would be like colorism, where they would sort of talk about different shades of black or shades of brown and things like that, right? But it still wasn't as prevalent. And so I didn't feel othered. I didn't feel less than in that way. Maybe I would feel different. Maybe somebody might be like, that person is darker than you or that person's lighter than you. But it was sort of, to me, like they were pointing something out. I didn't at the time see it as a bad thing. It wasn't until I migrated to Canada, I guess I heard lots of stories at first of people experiencing things. And again, I was a bit naive. I was just like, oh, maybe they just don't like you, or maybe you did something right to them, and maybe something happened that you're just not sure, right? And so I was very skeptical of some of the stories I would hear. And then I started to experience things myself, when I would go for job interviews or just walking down the street or just being in the bus, just being, just everyday life. And there was a sense of feeling really uncomfortable or, not being able to access something because of some strange reason that at the time, I had no idea. And so I had conversations with other people, and more I'm realizing, oh, it seems like there is a thing to this. Like, yes, I am being treated differently, and they are also being treated differently, but why? Why is that the case? And, everybody that I've asked, why would I be treated differently? They're like, it's because you're Black. And I'm like, but why would I be treated differently? Because again, this is not my lived experience, growing up in Jamaica. And so it didn't make sense to me why people would treat me differently because of that. I'm like, Black is beautiful. Like, why would you think of that as a bad thing? Then I had to realize that that's not everybody's experience, right? There are people who grew up in North America where for all of their lives, they've been told that they're inferior, that their skin color is inferior, and that their way of being and who they are is less than. And so it's a different mindset, right? And so I would say that some of those things, those experiences brought me to this work, but also, being in sort of the counseling mental health space, I just hear lots of stories of people who are going through lots of things that are just disheartening and cruel, and definitely wanted to be a part of the I guess allies that are working to help change that.
Yeah, and it's like really important work that you're doing as well, right? And just creating those safer spaces. And it's really interesting, like how you when you're like in different environments, you realize the different factors that go into how you're treated. Because like the similarly, like even in India, like I feel like it's the opposite where you're I guess because of colonialism, it was like, oh, we have to have like fair skin was automatically considered superior, but yeah, I don't know. It's definitely it puts things in perspective, like all the different factors that go into how you're treated and how that can itself be like traumatizing itself. And then so just kind of going more into like the theme of the series for this podcast. Which is that healing is both personal and collective. So, as we were just talking about communities, what would communal healing look like to you?
Yeah, so communal healing, like I was just saying, the coming together of people, being able to sit in a room and you're just hearing laughter for no reason. People are just sort of talking about their everyday. Someone walks into the room and they ask, "How are you?" And somebody actually launches into a story of how their day was and how things are going in their lives, rather than the North American, "I'm good," or "The weather is nice today" type answers, right? And so there's this sort of sense of genuineness and authenticity, with the responses. I think community healing is also a way to address what's going on for people, right? And so sort of this collective need to come together to heal. And so I think one of the ways that I saw community healing in practice was, when George Floyd died or when he was murdered. And, just communities of people coming together to mourn and to grieve that loss, to be able to talk about it. Even there was lots of allyship in that too, or there are lots of people around the world globally who talked about it, who, indicated that, yes, this should not have happened, and, came together to mourn that. But I also saw it with, the recent tragedy that happened in Vancouver, right, with the Lapu-Lapu Festival as well, how the Vancouver community really came together with, the Filipino community and, all the mental health resources that came out as a way to collectively grieve with these families that lost their loved ones on that day, or people who witnessed the atrocities of what happened on that day.
Yeah, those are like really important and great points that you touched on, because it's just like without like our community, it's just so hard to like really process and like move forward from whatever would have happened. And it exists on like all kinds of scales, from like your own individual level to like the big protests that you talk about that happened during COVID for Black Lives Matter. And yeah, like it's really just moving to see how humanity can come together and like really just move things forward.
Yes, definitely. Like, when you talk about sort of this idea of needing for it to be personal, I remember being really angry, like the personally angry piece. And you're like, oh, a therapist being angry, like it's so normal. It's normal for human beings, right? And I remember having a conversation. I was actually recording a series at the time. And, I was talking to the host, and we're talking about the idea that, sometimes it's important to look within ourselves, and to be able to do that personal healing on our own before entering into the community. Is a lot of times, people can, because they haven't, I guess, dealt with their own like sort of stuff, it sort of gets projected into a community or gets projected onto another person. And so I think they both need to happen together. And so if you're able to sort of gauge, okay, what's going on for me? How do I need to regulate my emotions? How do I need to identify what's going on for me first, and then say, okay, what do I need? And then be able to be like, okay, I need to have my friends around me, which is then the community healing. Or I need to, be around my friends and we're just having a good time or laughing, we're chatting. Or maybe I just need to talk to my friend about what's going on. And so that's sort of where the community healing comes in, once we've been able to identify what our personal needs are, and then we can then access the community for more healing.
Exactly. Yeah, that's like a really profound thing as well, right? Where you are just so self-aware with what you need, and then you can let yourself ask and like reach out for the help that you actually need. Yeah, and I think that's like a really important takeaway for everybody, where you just kind of need to put in that work in yourself to actually begin the healing process and then start to involve your community as well. Moving on to our next question. What kinds of spaces, physical, emotional, or cultural, have supported your healing or the healing of those around you and the ones that you support? Or what are some practices, that could be personal, cultural, creative, or spiritual that you've seen be especially powerful in supporting healing from sexualized violence?
So yeah, okay. So we're taking, and when I hear this question, I'm hearing sort of a wanting to have a more holistic approach. So physical, emotional, cultural, spaces that are supportive. And sexual violence is a really tough one, right? I think a lot of times people walk away feeling like they have to, they lose their voice in a sense. So they're silenced. They are really scared, afraid. There's a lot of stigma attached to it. So healing in this way could be wanting to ensure that whoever it is that you're going to tell, like that first person you're going to share it with, wanting to make sure that that person or that community is a safe space, that they're not going to further stigmatize or negatively stigmatize you. And it's the worst thing for a person to experience something like this and then to be told, to be blamed one, or to be told it's their fault, or to be dismissed in a sense, which happens so often. And so I would say, if this person could find a space, whether it's a friend that they know, or it's a mental health organization, a counselor, health and counseling, right? SVSPO, a space that it has created safety already. Maybe that could be the first place that they go to. And let's say, they're still a bit scared to go to SVSPO or scared to go to health and counseling. I generally tell clients, test out your friends or test out your family members. You can easily ask them a question. You could say, oh, a friend of mine experienced this thing. What do you think about that? Or, how would you?
Hypothetical, yeah.
Exactly. So it could be hypothetical, or it could be, somebody experienced this. What do you think about that? And so it's like you're testing the waters to see how a person would respond. And then that sort of would help you to sort of determine, because generally people will just respond naturally to these questions, especially if it's like open discussion. And then based on their response, that will tell you, okay, maybe I shouldn't tell this person what happened to me, or okay, maybe that person might be a good person I could share a bit more with after you hear their responses, like the way they think about it, also how they would deal with it. And so that could be another way that you can sort of test a little bit to see what people think. Physical safety is, a huge part of it because, sexual violence, your physical body is violated, right? And so sometimes that can be related to a lot of the space that a person's in. So where the person lives, their neighborhood, it could also be connected to where the incident happened. So was that classroom, or if it was, in a hallway at school. Or it was, outside of school, maybe it was on the bus, or it was, so there are different places that these things could happen. And a lot of times, with post-traumatic stress or PTSD, a lot of times people will, I guess, sometimes avoid these places or feel really uncomfortable in these spaces, right? And so being able to identify what those triggers are could be helpful. And being able to find ways to, I guess, find physical safety, right? And then once you're able to find physical safety, then you're able to work on the emotional safety piece. So the physical safety comes first, and then the work on the emotional safety comes after. Yeah, and it's a longer process, the emotional safety. It could take a lot of work. So I do think, connecting with a counselor or somebody who you can really talk about what happened and create that safety for yourself, it could help. I know SVSPO does help with the physical safety piece. I know that they've been able to help people move spaces, if necessary. So
And I believe the case managers also help support with safety planning and just coming up with different ways to just kind of ensure that they're feeling physically safe. And it's like you said, like it's such a sensitive thing to disclose to someone. And It also just kind of plays into, like, you testing out who your true community is, and also like kind of expanding like a part of your community as you reach out for more support, and how it all just kind of ties in together like that.
For sure. And the last one, I think about sort of that cultural piece. I know, like, there, within some cultures, the stigma is really high when it comes to sexualized violence. Like, bodies are so sexualized within some cultures. And, sort of the idea of just even talking about sex is so taboo that there's so much tension. So I could see how somebody could be really afraid to bring it up, just to say this happened to me, like right away, they're, reduced even more. So if you think about a marginalized person, then being further marginalized because this thing happened to them, which was not their doing, it wasn't something they wanted, they're a victim of this. But then another person would think of them even, there would be even more marginalized. So I guess there'd be intersections of marginalization that can happen because this thing took place, right?
Yeah, and you can kind of see, like, especially when different cultures especially are involved, like how much more complex and layered like the process of just seeking that support gets, because like you're just bound by so many different barriers, like whether they're like personal or cultural or physical for sure. But yeah, it's definitely not an easy disclosure to make for someone at all. And it's like, and I also heard that, when you were talking about like just kind of test out like how your parents or your friends or your family would react with certain situations like that, I think that also really just helps identify like who your true community is, I guess, like we talked about earlier too. So yeah, you kind of see like how community also just like ties into like just even the process of starting to heal as well.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. And just speaking of how community is involved in healing, in your professional experience, how does community involvement impact an individual's healing process, especially after trauma or violence? And what role do you think community plays in creating a safe space for healing and justice?
Yes, I'm thinking about different groups, right? And so we think about community a lot of times as, oh, we meet with our ethnicities, right? Or I'm Jamaican, so I'm going to go meet up with my Jamaican friends and I'm going to, feel safe within my Jamaican community. But sometimes when this happens, it doesn't necessarily work that way. A lot of times, maybe the person who is a perpetrator is in that Jamaican community. And so you can't go back to that community. Like, it's like your community has actually broken down. And, a lot of times the victim is the one who loses community, which is sad, right? Because that's the person who needs the community even more, right? And so it can be really tough until a disclosure happens. It makes it challenging for that person to go back into a community, especially if the perpetrator is there. So that's one thing to consider. But how does, I guess, community involvement impact the person's healing process? I do think if the person is able to find a space, a safe space where they can talk about what happened, if there are people within that space that would be patient, would be willing to listen. If they're willing to believe them, that happened, they're gave their support. And again, this is something that initially could be difficult for the person. And so they may talk about the same thing over and over. And you might be like, oh my God, she's talking about it again. Because this is just a part of that person's experience in this moment, right? And so sometimes that person just needs, they just need you to listen, just be there. And so, and I think that is a huge part of the healing process, the person just being able to externalize what happened and to just have somebody else listen, do the active listening piece. And I think that's sort of why counseling is very helpful in that time. But, not everybody has access to counseling. And so if they're able to find friends or, a group of people who are willing to do that listening for them, then I think that that could be really helpful. So just being there, listening to them speak this, say it over and over or talk about it could be helpful. Other things that could be helpful too in community, or, I guess maybe if you realize as a community member or a friend that the things that this person is talking about is just so much more intense than what you can, bear or be patient for. That you realize your threshold is, it's just a lot, then you maybe your role could be referring the person to somebody else, somebody that would be able to handle it better than you, right? And so I think community members, I think a lot of times there's this guilt of, oh, this person's going through a lot and I need to be there for them. But I think being a good community member is recognizing when something is too much for you or something is too much. It's out of your capacity to deal with. And so being able to refer that person on so that they can get the professional help that they need. And I think that that could be really helpful for that person. You're still there to support them, but they're getting extra support from somebody else who can handle it. And I think that that could be helpful for sure. What role does community play in creating space for healing and justice? I do think, once the person feels believed, once the person feels like, okay, there are others who are supporting me, sometimes they can feel like, okay, I can do something about this. A lot of times, when something happens, sexual violence happens, the person feels powerless, like the control has been taken away from them, and they feel like that person sort of like took a part of them that they won't be able to get back. And so it can be really challenging to advocate for self or to, go and say, I'm gonna report you to this person and that person, right? And so depending on what took place, it may take time for the person to get to that place where they feel empowered to do something about it. And so community can be helpful if a friend is willing to be like, I'll go to the police station with you. We'll report it together. Or, if the person that they spoke to first said, I'll patiently wait until you're ready to do something about it, but here are the resources. So sort of sometimes it's just sharing what the resources are, what the possibilities are, and then let the person decide when they want to take action. I think that that could be helpful.
And it's so much so about like giving that agency and that power back to the person who probably feels like that they don't have any at the moment after going through something so traumatic. And I'm also hearing a lot of it is just about, showing up and doing like the simplest things. I mean, of course, they depend on like your own capacity as well, like you said. But it's just, like how they say, like it takes a village, and it's just about being the villager and just kind of doing like whatever part you can. Like, no, even if like you're not there, you're just there as like a resource referral, or like support is in the simplest of things. Thank you for sharing that.
No problem.
To keep things going, what do you wish more people understood about how to support survivors, not just in crisis, but over time?
I think one of the things I think about when I saw this question was sort of the idea of having a, I guess, a trauma-informed lens. And I know not everybody will have that, but it's sort of the idea of the patience piece that I talked about earlier, like going at that person's pace. I think a lot of times when villagers, like you mentioned, or community members hear like the atrocities or what happened to the person, they themselves get triggered or upset or angry on that person's behalf. And